Centers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, the topic of today, the main topic, is going to be the first presidential debate. You know, that fiasco that happened a couple nights ago. Well, you know, you got the talking media heads focusing on the content. On the form. On the form of it. Oh, you know, this terrible performance by Trump, just browbeating Biden, stealing his time, you know, refusing to respond to the efforts of the moderator to control it, just stepping over everything and everybody. You know, was that just a horrible behavior? Or was that a conscious strategy? You know, rattle Biden. Make him look like he can't handle it, right? So we're going to focus on most of the show on analyzing that debate, debacle, whatever, but not from the perspective of the form of it, which is so obvious, but from the content of it. What was actually said? What wasn't said that should have been said? Does it appear either of these candidates have a program for dealing with this triple crisis, soon to be a quadruple crisis, when the political crisis ripens even further in the election? Triple crisis being obviously a health crisis, not just COVID, but healthcare. You know, you got 40 million more people without health insurance out there on top of the, 30 million that already existed. How many tens of millions more have bare bones, worthless health insurance with $5,000 deductibles, in other words, just catastrophic, that they're paying for because that's all they can afford? Now, we got a health crisis in general. The United States is a banana republic as far as providing health care for its citizens, except for the very rich who can afford it, of course. Yeah. And the second crisis, the economic crisis. Oh, we got a rebound, as obviously when you start reopening, you're going to get a rebound of the economy over the summer, but that's petering out. You know, notwithstanding all that you hear about, the recovery is underway. No, it was a rebound, and the rebound is softening. And we'll talk about the jobs numbers here briefly in a prelude to the discussion of the debates as well. Yeah, indication that the rebound is slowing. And what we got coming behind it, you know, mass layoffs being announced. Oh, it's the W shape. It's the W shape trajectory of the, quote, longer recovery that I've been talking about for 6 months. Okay, that's the second crisis. You know, what did they say about that? What did they say about the health COVID crisis? What did the two candidates say about the economic crisis, right? What about the climate crisis? I live in California. It's burning. It's burning. Yeah, healthcare, you know, it's global warming. It's that simple. The temperatures are way up and, you know, the rainy season comes later and it ends sooner and, you know, everything dries out and burns up. Not just California, it's the whole West, you know. And then on the east, what do we got? Oh, we got hurricane after hurricane and big tornadoes before, never had before, you know, in the midsection of the country. Anyway, third crisis, climate crisis. What did they say about that? And then, of course, we got the brewing fourth crisis, which is the political crisis I've been writing about. By the way, if you want a more in-depth coverage of that, check out my blog, jackrasmus.com. Just published an article here, also on various other blogs, on the presidential debate. And a third of it is about the political crisis that's brewing, accelerating, intensifying. Check it out. Okay, so, you know, that's a political crisis coming on top of, well, it's already half here, on top of the climate crisis, on top of the economic crisis, on top of the health crisis. They're all converging, and they're all exacerbating each other. What did these guys have to say about that? And then I like to just keep throwing out here in the show and in my writings, if you check out some of the commentary behind the scenes on the financial system, they're growing worried. You know, the IMF just put out a report here about global debt being accelerated, intensified by the crisis. And it couldn't be paid before. Well, now it's even getting worse. And they're starting to talk about defaults coming. Well, they're already coming in some areas, commercial property and so forth. What's going to happen, according to IMF, you know, when you start getting these defaults? Can they control? Can the central banks control these defaults? Not just corporate, you know, but a lot of households and a lot of sovereign countries, especially in emerging markets. IMF's getting worried. Because the IMF can't bail out all of these countries, you know, that default on their debt. The longer the general crisis, the economic in particular, continues, the longer it takes to really generate a recovery, you know, the longer it bounces along the bottom in the W shape or relapses even further into a second double dip recession, the longer that occurs, well, the greater the threat and possibility of a financial instability event. In other words, the greater the fragility grows in the financial system. Fragility means predisposition to instability, easier to provoke. And when you do have an instability event, the more serious it becomes. And the more contagion across markets and countries occurs. That's what fragility is. You know? But instability is the actual event. Well, you know, the IMF and others are beginning to worry about that. So is the Federal Reserve and the central banks. That's why they've built up this huge liquidity cash buffer for the banks and the financial system to keep it from imploding. What are some of the areas or sectors of the economy, industries, sectors of the economy that are most prone to defaults? And defaults, of course, are the stuff of financial instability. You know, the company and or the government entity or the household group, you know, cannot finance the debt. The debt builds up. As long as their incomes are growing, yeah, you can keep financing and adding debt. Debt growth is not a problem so long as you can keep financing it. In other words, paying the principal and interest on it. But once you have a contraction of the economy, well, then you don't have the source for paying the principal and interest, right? And then the debt can't be repaid. You default on the debt, and then you have a crisis, you see, if it's widespread enough. Yeah, if it's a company here or there, you know, they can contain it. Maybe even a sector in industry. But the financial system is so interconnected today, and the channels of transmission are so efficient that contagion spreads immediately, quickly, across different financial markets. And then they have a hard time getting their hands around it, controlling it. You see, that's the risk today. in a totally capitalist, financialized global economy, the crisis spreads quickly. No. And to some extent, even the real economy, non-financial economy, is so interconnected today that it spills over fairly quickly. It's a global capitalist economy. You don't have crises anymore in individual countries, unless it's some, you know, small emerging market, frontier market economy that got in trouble and the IMF can bail it out. Yeah, well, that. But when it's an advanced economy, you know, like North America or Japan or Europe, China, can't be contained very easily. Okay, so we're going to talk about that maybe at the end if we have time. That meaning growing financial global fragility and worries in the press, the media, the business groups that know how, that, oh, something's coming here. We better be careful. We better get this real economy straightened up pretty quick. Ah, but they're not straightened it out. You know, what are the sectors of industry in the U.S. that are most prone for defaults now? Well, if we have time, we'll talk about those. To keep an eye on them, in other words. But let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back. All right, the topic is the presidential report. But first I want to say a few things, updates about the jobs report for September that just came out, the official government Labor Department jobs report. And I want to make a comment on the status of the stimulus negotiations between Pelosi and Mnuchin. Where is that? And then maybe say a few things about, a few comments about our glorious leader now has COVID. Or does he? Oh, okay. Well, just a few speculative comments on that. But first, the jobs report. Okay, the jobs report came out today, and they're trying to give it a spin, positive spin, in the business, talking heads, media. But what it really represents is a continued slowing, and problems beginning to appear here even more so in the jobs market. You know, the labor market, jobs market are a lagging indicator, as they say. But it's pretty clear what's developing underneath in the jobs market is not very positive, even though they put a spin on it. Oh, what's the spin? Oh, the spin is, well, you know, the unemployment rate went down from 8.4% to 7.9%. Ooh, that's an improvement, right? Well, first of all, at the expense of sounding overly repetitive every month here, I talk about this. You know, that 8.4%, 7.9% is full-time unemployed only. Full-time workers losing the job. Jobs. You know, we got 50, 60 million out of 160 million in labor force who are really part-time, temp, contract, independent contractor, freelancer, whatever, gig worker. They're not full-time workers losing their job. Well, that's not in the 7.9%. Plus, the way the U.S. calculates the unemployment rate, you got to be out of work and actively looking for work. If you just are jobless and drop out and give up because you sent out 100 resumes and got no response, right? You dropped out. You gave up doing that. You did that 3 months ago and didn't hear from anybody. So what good is it to send 100 more out, right? You've dropped out of the labor force, which means you may be jobless. You may not be collecting benefits, unemployment benefits, but you're not considered unemployed. Oh, the way the U.S. defines it. You know, labor force is made up of those who have jobs and those who are unemployed but actively looking for work. But if you gave up and dropped out, you're not looking for work, so you're not unemployed, you're not in the labor force, you're not in that equation, that calculation that gets you to 7.9%. Yeah, it's really oxymoron the way they do it, I think. Well, how many have left the labor force? Well, somewhere between 4.5 and 9.5 million. You know, in the government monthly statistics, there's, there's like 30 different tables. And there's one table there called the civilian labor force that shows it's 4.5 million fewer in the labor force today as of September compared to February when this whole crisis began. 4.5 million somehow left the labor force. 4.5 million. There's another statistic there that shows you the magnitude of the change called not in the labor force. Well, that's down 9.5 million since February. Well, you know, some of them may not have been workers who dropped out of the labor force, school, or people leaving the military, it's, you know, other categories like that. So the number of people who have dropped out of the labor force are somewhere between 4.5 and 9.5 million are jobless. Yeah, let's just say six million or 7 million, you know, are jobless. Right. Well, you got to add them to the official unemployment level and unemployment rate, but they don't do that. They don't do that. Right. Another thing that's interesting from this statistics that came out last month is that 19.1 million have been unemployed for more than 27 weeks compared to 5.6 million in May. You know, that's 2 months into the crisis. And that was after 6 months, the number of people that continue to be jobless for long term is rising. Pretty damn fast. It's really a number to be concerned about. You know, the number of those who were long-term unemployed in August was 12 million. So we got 7.1 million more who are long-term jobless now. Yeah, compared to 5.6. In other words, we got like 14 million people who are unemployed for more than 6 months. Ah, more than 6 months means you're losing your state unemployment benefits after 6 months. They're just dropping off the unemployment benefit rolls. They're just disappearing. It looks like, oh, you know, fewer people getting unemployment benefits from the state system. No, they're just exhausting them. They're still unemployed. They just don't have any unemployment benefits anymore. By the way, talk about unemployment benefits. They come out weekly on Thursdays. What was the number we had here yesterday? Well, on the state system, remember there's two systems. There's the state unemployment benefit system and what's called the new PUA, Federal Unemployment Benefit System, which was finally set up for the first time in March. To provide benefits to independent contractors, freelancers, gig workers, that group of unemployed workers. That's a supplement to the state. What you see in the state, in the monthly unemployment benefits, I mean monthly unemployment report from the government, is really the state level data. You're not getting that supplemental federal data. That makes it a little bit more accurate. So what did we get on Thursday? Well, another almost 1.5 million people filed in just the last week for first-time unemployment benefits. And you know it's been 1.5 million for at least a month or more now? 1.5 million people newly unemployed collecting, filing for benefits. Now, there's a lot of them who are unemployed and didn't complete their application for new benefit claims, or they just gave up. You know, if you're not looking for work, you can't get unemployment benefits. Oh, you've dropped out. You know, that 4.5-7 million, whatever, that dropped out of the labor force, they're not even on the 1.5 million per week new filings for unemployment benefits. Now, 1.5 million is made up of about 850,000 on the state benefit system and another 500,000-600,000 on the federal PUA system. So it's 1.5 million. Oh, but you know, you read the media and what do you get? Oh, they only talk about the 830,000-840,000 state. They ignore. They don't report. Or if they do, it's buried at the back of the article or something. They don't report the federal supplement additional unemployment benefits. Weekly unemployment benefit new filings, new claims, still running 1.5 million a week. So what is that? That's like 6 million in the last month. Increased unemployment, people filing for unemployment benefits? Oh, but the unemployment rate went down from 8.4 to 7.9. Even though 6 million people more filed for benefits, it went down. You know, the government even has a statistic called the U-6, which at least tries to add some of the people, some, who drop out of the labor force, you know, and who are involuntarily part-time unemployed, involuntarily. You know, they don't count the voluntary unemployed part-time. People who are given the option of saving their job by their company if they go on part-time, oh, that's voluntary. They volunteered to do that. They're not included in the U-6. It's only those who involuntarily. Well, that's 12.8%, not 7.9% when you add those part-time and dropout categories. Yeah, that's 12.8% of 160 million. Yeah. Okay, so, you know, that gives you close to 20 million, doesn't it? Yeah. And then you add the 4.5 to 6 million dropouts to that, and you get about 27, at least 27 million people who are still jobless. And that's almost a 20% unemployment rate. Still. And what's coming around the corner? Just read the front page of the business press. Well, the airlines are threatening to lay off, just the two biggest threatening to lay off 32,000 workers this weekend. American United. There's others behind it, you know, at least 35,000 airline workers. You know, they're trying to blackmail the government here. You better pass and give us some more free money, the airlines. You give us some more free money here, or else we're going to throw 40,000 people onto the unemployment rolls. And then Disney announced 28,000. Allstate Insurance, 3,000, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, these are big companies, and these are permanent layoffs. This isn't temporary furloughs, you see, COVID-related furloughs. This is full-time, regular, and permanent, mostly, layoffs. What about the airlines? You know, United, American, whatever. Well, they already were given $50 billion, $25 billion direct, and loans of $25 billion since March. Now they want more? Yeah, they want more. They want another $25 billion in cash, you see, grants from the government, so that they can pay the wages of their workers, so that they can pocket the money that they would have used paying the wages of their workers and use it for something else. And what do the airlines typically use it for? Stock buybacks and dividends. Yeah, you want to know how much the airlines in the previous 5 years, well, maybe it's only 3 years, distributed of their cash that they made, and they were making big profits, to their shareholders. $45 billion in the years leading up to this, instead of keeping it as a safety valve in case, you know, a very volatile industry goes up and down, like the crisis we have now. Instead of holding on to it and keeping it as a safety cushion, they gave it all to their shareholders. 40-something billion dollars they gave, maybe it's 52, I forget exactly what it was, to their shareholders. And now, of course, they don't have money on hand, and they want the government to subsidize them, which it's been doing. You know, airlines have a big lobby because they hire a lot of workers. You know, and they go after the Republicans in Congress and the Democrats, who don't want that kind of unemployment. But, you know, they're grifting the bailout, as so many companies are. They're stealing the money. Really. How much longer we got to just keep giving them more and more? Because, look, the airline industry is not coming back to what it was. You know, the big cash cow for airlines is business travel, and businesses aren't going to travel. They figured out a way to work remotely. You're not going to see them running around all these conferences and meetings and sales events and so forth that they used to. No, the airlines are going to be in trouble for a long time until they consolidate, you see. There's just too many airlines. They got to consolidate. Some of them got to go under. They got to consolidate. And there's no other answer to it. But in the meantime, they want more and more money. We're talking about airline companies. What about Boeing? Right? Boeing's even worse gaming of the system. Boeing, of course, was in trouble long before the crisis. And in the CARES Act in March, the government put aside, what was it, 50 or 45 or 50 billion for Boeing. Boeing didn't take it. Because if Boeing took that money from the government, the loans from the government, it would have to use like 75% of it to pay the wages of their workers. They didn't want to pay the wages of their workers because they had plans to get rid of their workers in Seattle and move to non-union operations in South Carolina. That was their plan all along. And they couldn't take that money or they would have to pay wages of the workers in Seattle, you see. So what did they do? They refused the bailout loans from the government. Instead, Boeing went and borrowed $25 billion in bonds in the financial markets and announced they were laying off 16,000 workers in Seattle. As I predicted when that happened 6 months ago, that was just a prelude to shifting all the operations, or most of the operations, from Seattle to non-union South Carolina. And you know what? Last week, they just announced that. 16,000 workers in Seattle lose their jobs, and they're moving to South Carolina. Well, that's going, you know, that problem reaches back in several years. I think it was like 6 to 7 years ago when the machinist union that represents the workers in Seattle had negotiations with Boeing. Boeing is playing hardball, wanted the right in the contract to move workers if they wanted to. Well, when they put that contract proposal to a vote of the workers up there in Seattle, they voted it down. But the leaders in Washington of the International Association of Machinists, their union, did an end run on their own workers. You know, the vote was in November, and they waited until the Christmas break and then sent a mail vote to everybody without telling them. And a lot of the workers didn't vote it or never got their ballots and whatever. And you know what? They pushed through the changes in their union contract that said Boeing can move. And now they're doing it. Now they're doing it. I guess, you know, those engineers over there in Seattle and Boeing making $70,000-$80,000 can go get a job, you know, at Amazon for 25 now, 25,000 a year. Anyway, enough said about the jobs situation. What about the stimulus negotiations? Well, that's still dragging on. You know, back in May, the House passed the HEROES Act, or bill, rather. You know, another $3.2 trillion, 3.4, I forget. That was to be a real stimulus, you see, because the CARES Act in March was not a stimulus. It was just to buy time, eight weeks, and that was dissipated. And then they were to have a real stimulus. Well, you know, the Republicans, McConnell and buddies in the Senate, just dragged their feet, waiting to see what kind of statistics and evidence of a rebound might occur, because it was going to occur. It was going to be a rebound. You can't open up after you're totally closed and not have growth. The question is, how long does that occur before it fades and dissipates? But the Republicans came out with $1.5 trillion in the Senate, you see, in July. And then negotiations began in early August as the $600 benefits and other benefits began to conclude. You know, the PPP, Small Business Loan Program, concluded in early August. So they finally began negotiations, you know, Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, because the Senate bowed out of it, McConnell bowed out of it because his right wing, led by Rand Paul, you know, said, oh, deficit, too much. Now we can't agree to anything. So he let Mnuchin carry the ball in negotiations with Pelosi. Pelosi got sucked in. This is a little bit of history here. Pelosi got sucked in to making a major move, said, okay, we drop our proposal to $2 trillion from $3.4 trillion. But then she got sandbagged. And this guy, Mark Meadows, and you know, staff, chief of staff heading the negotiations for Trump, walked out after Pelosi made her move, didn't make any counter move, walked out. And then we got those four phony executive orders by Trump. Well, that was all just tactical to stop it all in its tracks, all the negotiations on a stimulus. And they haven't really reopened that negotiations until this past week, you see, because now you got big airlines, you know, laying off 32,000 people. panic. And the economy is beginning to show signs of the recovery slowing down. It's not in the double dip yet, but it's on its way. It's on its way because, you know, even Goldman Sachs forecasted GDP in the fourth quarter will be cut at least in half from what it is in the third quarter. So we'll get a good rebound, maybe two-thirds, three-fourths of the economy in GDP terms, not job terms, recovering in its third quarter, July, September. But then that's going to contract again in the fourth quarter, I think more than what Goldman Sachs is even forecasting. Okay, so, you know, now they've resurrected the negotiations, the stimulus, but it's going nowhere. I mean, even Pelosi kind of gave up and had the House vote to pass her proposal, the U.S. House, of $2.2 trillion. You know, she came back up $200 billion from her $2 trillion that she had offered back there in August. The Republicans are resurrecting their $1.5 trillion from July bill. And they're discussing, you know, you're at $2.2 trillion, we're at $1.5 trillion. No, we're not that far apart, except, you know, we have some principles here that we're both far apart on, and that is the Republicans, as part of this deal, want to absolve corporations of all liabilities and how they treat their workers during this pandemic in providing health and safety and other reasons. Yeah, they want to do that. And Pelosi wants some money for state and local governments because they're broke. And they're about to really be in deep doo-doo here the next fiscal year coming. And you may very well see cities and maybe even a few states defaulting. Yeah. Okay, so that's where we are with negotiations. Now, we may get a change. We may get something, you know, but I think it's like a 10-15% possibility you'll get a stimulus this weekend, because after this weekend, they're all going home. You see, all the congressional people are going home and campaigning, saying, oh, give me 2-6 more years. They're going to be out of there. They're not coming back. Yeah. It's the last opportunity until December. And then I don't know what a lame duck Congress might do. Anyway, that's what where we are in the stimulus. Now, what about, very quickly, I don't want to spend a lot of time. I want to get to the actual presidential debate. What about what's going on with the COVID thing here with Trump? You know, irony of ironies. Trump's got the virus. Or does he? I don't know. Some say, oh, it's a tactic. I don't know whether I agree with that argument that he's not really sick, you see. He's not really, you can't trust him, right? He's doing this so he doesn't have to debate anymore, right? So he can get sympathy and attention because he looks strong when in a week from now he comes out right before the election and he says, I beat it, right? Say it's not that serious. Right? It gives him evidence that the virus really isn't a big deal and that, you know, therefore, all the economy can quickly open up, right? Guy never tells the truth. Can't believe him, right? Irony of irony. It's a hoax. It's a hoax. I hear some of my commentators saying that. Oh, it's all a hoax. Okay. 60-40, I don't believe it. I think he's really got it. Well, we'll see. We'll see. If we get him on TV like we got Boris Johnson there looking like he was on his last legs, right, when he had the infection. Looked like death warmed over. Well, that won't put Trump in front of a camera with that. But we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, maybe it's a hoax, a tactic. You can't put anything beyond him because when you look at what... Excuse me, what went on in debates here, finally segueing to that topic, you know, what was all that about? You know, what was all that about? That meaning the presidential debate. Well, I think it was purposeful on Trump's part, but he went a little too far, got carried away, to really browbeat Biden by interrupting him and stepping all over him and so forth to make Biden look like he just couldn't handle it. And then you come out of that and Trump says, see, I told you, he's a lightweight, Sleepy Joe. If he can't handle that, how can he handle Xi of China? I think that was a strategy, but Trump just overdid it. But what really came out of that? What did we really see there? Well, first of all, we saw a refusal of both sides, Trump and Biden, the two wings of the corporate party of America, as I like to call the Trumpublicans and the Democrats, right? Not proposing any real solutions or plan or program, you know, integrated total program for dealing with these multiple crises, healthcare, economic, race relations, climate, and creating a political crisis in the process, right? What did you hear that gave you some hope that, oh, there's a real organized plan for dealing with what we're facing? Also, what we see is identity politics run amok. You know, I've been railing against identity politics because it divides us. You know, that could be race identity. That could be all kinds of you know, cultural identity and so forth, people totally preoccupied with their identity in this country. You know, who am I? This is a very individualist kind of focus on things. Who am I? You know? And it keeps us all divided. It's easy to manipulate and exploit by the politicians. It keeps us at each other's throats, and it's the great distraction that keeps us looking the other way, why the rich elites of both parties pick our pockets. You know, the flip side of this great distraction of identity politics is the big ripoff, economic ripoff. Whatever you do, don't unite people on economic issues. Keep them all fragmented and atomized and thinking about, you know, their TikTok and Instagram and Twitter and all that other social media bullshit. Keep them distracted, right? You know, social media is the bread and circus of the Rome, you see? They used to just give them free bread in Rome during the empire and give them all these games, right? So people go get their allocation of free bread, and then they go to the circus, you know, which was really the racetrack, or the Colosseum, see people stab each other, right? Yeah, keep them distracted. Well, we got electronic circus going on here. Social media. Well, you know, what you saw is identity attacks on each other, Trump and even Biden on Trump, instead of talking about the real issues and giving us a real plan and program to get out of this. And what we also saw at the end here and throughout the debate was a harbinger, a political crisis just around the corner at the street level and simultaneously in the major political institutions of the country, including the electoral system. It's a further collapse, or at least an atrophying, of democracy right before our eyes occurring. So that's what we see in this debate, right? Refusal to talk about the real issues in any detail. Biden tried but couldn't, didn't. Identity politics run amok. And a harbinger, political crisis that's coming. Well, let's look at what wasn't discussed in any meaningful detail. Well, what about the economics, right? The economic crisis or economic. You know, Biden raised this $750 in taxes that Trump apparently only paid here, according to New York Times, for 2 years. And didn't pay anything for 10 out of the last 15 years. Well, Trump just says, fake news, fake news. Oh, I paid $1 million. You won't find out till after the election. So fake news, you know, kind of just blunts that whole thing there. But none of them talked about 4 decades long of tax redistribution in this country since 2001. $15 trillion in tax cuts. Almost all to investor households, to their corporations, to businesses, to the wealthy 1-5% at the most. $15 trillion. Under Bush, $4.7 trillion. Obama, $6.1. Yeah, $6.1 trillion under Obama in tax cuts. Not during the bailout, but in extending and passing, agreeing to the Bush tax cuts in perpetuity. $6 trillion. And then Trump comes with another $5 trillion on top of that. And then, of course, in March, we gave him another $650 billion, almost all to businesses, investors. What did they do with that? You don't hear him talking about that much, do you, in the media? What did they do with that? Well, they pocketed it, or they're sitting on it. Nor any discussion of income inequality. Well, it's that $15 trillion that's the big cause of it. You know, you cut their taxes $15 trillion. It allows corporations then to give trillions back to their shareholders and themselves, the management. By the way, stock buybacks in tech, 70% of the buybacks are enjoyed by the senior managers. They're giving it to themselves in tech. How much? Well, under Obama, more than $6 trillion was distributed in buybacks and dividends since 2010. In 6 years, $6 trillion, just about. How about Trump in his first 3 years? $3.4 trillion in 3 years. That's like $10 trillion. $15 trillion in tax cuts, $10 trillion passed down to shareholders. Yeah, the rest they're just sitting on, probably. Well, was any discussion of that? No. How about the 30, 40 million workers who are still jobless? Any discussion of that? No. Or what about the announcements of big layoffs coming? No. I'm talking about no, both of them, right? What about small businesses? You know, National Federation of Independent Business forecast 21% of small businesses are going to go under or already have. How many small businesses we got in this country? 30 million. Figure it out. 6 million. How many jobs are going out with that number of 6 million? Fail, they're going to fail. Oh, is that fake news? National Federation of Independent Business is the trade lobbying arm for small businesses. This is a business number. Oh, well, wait a minute. What about the PPP program? Well, they distributed $525 billion to 4.9 million. A lot of that was scammed by bigger businesses. What about the other 25 million small businesses? Nada. Yeah. Oh, it's all fake news, right? Oh, they talked about manufacturing. Yeah. Biden was saying, oh, he created all these manufacturing jobs. And well, the fact is, we've lost at least 4 million manufacturing jobs since 2000. Most of them, the free trade, allowing companies, U.S. companies, to move offshore. Subsidizing them to move offshore. Give them tax cuts for moving offshore. Yeah, that's what they did. Or give them tax cuts to invest in new capital equipment so they can lay off more workers. You know, those two things are responsible for the collapse of jobs in manufacturing. It's a structural, long-term thing. It's not just a cyclical thing. Oh, you know? The Democrats praise NAFTA. Oh, they thought it was, you know, they get this little token agreement that's smoke and mirrors, and Trump simply renegotiates the same deal he has and he calls it a different name. Nothing in it for workers. Nope. Did he bring jobs back? Nope. From trade? No. What did he spend? All this 2 years of trade war, mostly with China. Oh, he was so successful, he had to give agribusiness and the farmers $49 billion in direct subsidy checks. That's how successful he was. And by the way, 17 more billion in the CARES Act, and he's proposing 20 more billion. Yeah, the free trade was so successful. Yeah. You know, we got manufacturing output increasing over the summer, but not jobs. The jobs aren't coming back in manufacturing. Those who have jobs are working harder and longer and putting out with fewer workers what they did with more workers before. Well, that's the manufacturing reality here. And by the way, you know, the jobs that came back after 2010, a lot of them were just temp jobs in manufacturing. No benefits, two-tier, temp, part-time temp jobs, and lower wages. That's why the jobs that were recovered, and it took 6 years under Obama to recover the jobs lost since 2007, 6 years, wasn't recovered to the same level until 2015, and the jobs that came back paid significantly less than the jobs that were lost. Yeah, that's Biden's record on manufacturing. And of course, Trump's record on manufacturing is more of the same. Didn't bring anything back. Trade. Free trade. They're both for free trade. You know, except that, oh, the trade problem was China. That's Biden's, you know, blame China. And now, of course, Trump's doing the same. What about COVID? Well, it came down to Biden saying, wear a mask, and Trump saying, vaccine around the corner. Is that a program? You know, part of our problem with COVID was we allowed businesses over the decades to farm out all of the PPE to China and elsewhere. And they still haven't done anything about it. They're still importing this stuff. And most important, you know, we can't seem to get up to, you know, the million of quick tests we need every day in order to keep this thing under control. You know, that million testing is how you will save yourself until a vaccine, if it ever comes. We can't get up there because guess what? A lot of the reagents aren't produced in this country. We'll never get to a million tests a day that's necessary, right? Well, that's their whole program. And what about, you know, the 40 million workers with employer-paid health insurance who are unemployed now and don't have that health insurance on top of the 30 million that still didn't have health insurance despite passing of Obamacare. Look, Obamacare is a $900 billion a year subsidy to the health insurance companies. That's what it was. And they sold it to the people with pre-existing conditions and a few other nice, you know, positive provisions. That's how they sold it. But it's really about subsidizing and getting health insurance companies to be neutral in passing that legislation. We got a health crisis that's greater than just COVID. COVID just exacerbated it, right? 50 million at least uninsured, another 30, 40 million grossly underinsured. Not as just bare bones, you know, disaster plans that they can afford. They can't afford anything more, $5,000 deductibles, right? Did we hear any plan there from any of these guys? No, nothing. All right. What about climate change? Oh, Biden's going to join the Paris Accords. Right. Trump says, nah, it costs too much for business. And that's about where they left it. Right. Oh, you know, Trump attacks Biden about California burning. He said, oh, you guys didn't rake up enough leaves. Yeah. And Biden failed to even say, hey, look, if California's burning, 65% of the forests in California are federally managed. So your Interior Department's not raking the leaves. Did you say that? No. But what we saw was this identity politics food fight between the two. You know, Trump blasting him about his kids and Sleepy Joe and all the other stuff. And then Biden saying, oh, you're a clown and so forth, right? Well, that was a tactic, you see. Keep it all at that level, which Trump pretty much did. You know, if Joe had a plan, he sure didn't come out with it. Maybe he wasn't allowed to, but he sure didn't. Wasn't able to handle it. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not going to get into more of the identity politics topic. Read my article. You know, I pontificate on that a little bit. What was most important coming out, though, from the debate was the political crisis. You know, accelerated. You know, as I wrote also on my blog, an article a month or so ago, a most dire warning predicting the most likely scenario on November 3rd will be a challenge to the mail-in vote ballots. You know, CNN poll says 66% of Republicans are going to go vote directly and only 22% of Democrats are going to vote directly. So what you're going to see on election night is the appearance of Trump winning. because you get more direct votes being counted first. Mail ballots will come in later. He'll declare himself elected, no doubt, right? And then he'll try to stop the mail-in ballot vote count in key states. He's already got his lawyers there lined up to do it. He's going to try to stop it. And then he'll have his Supreme Court, 6-3 majority, really solid, safe, right? Will support stopping the mail-in vote in the key states, like the Supreme Court did in 2000 in Florida. The precedent is already there, except this time it will be multiple Floridas, you see. Stop the vote count and create as much chaos as you can, economically, politically. Oh, Biden says, he'll accept the vote and he'll leave. Ha, ha, ha. I don't believe it. Do you? He's not going to leave, and who's going to move him out? Right? He's going to have the DHS federal cops now. First time in our history we got federal cops called DHS, Department of Homeland Security. The police departments are largely, behind him. The Pentagon says, we're not going to get involved. Sorry, Joe. They're not going to get involved. And then he's got the Proud Boys. Remember that? He was asked by the moderator to condemn the Proud Boys. Did he condemn them? No, he said, Proud Boys, stand back, but stand by. Whoa. Look, these are neo-fascists, these guys. These are Special Forces wannabes, right? Overweight, pot-bellied Special Forces wannabes. Running around with the AR-15s. You know how many AR-15s are out there in this country? 15 million. You don't think he's going to call on them when people come out in the street protesting his power grab, his coup? That's Antifa. That's BLM militants. We got to stop them. Proud Boys, come on down to Washington and guard the White House. Their numbers are doubling. Yeah, he's recruiting for them. They're waiting for the big dog whistle that'll come on November 4th or soon after, right? And the longer the whole thing drags on and is unresolved into January and beyond, maybe, as he said, won't be resolved for months. And the more crisis we have in the meantime, at the street level as well, the more likely is his 6-3 majority Supreme Court, in order to stop the social unrest, will rule with him and for him. Now, that's an extreme scenario, but it's not impossible. It's not unfeasible. And if there was a scenario forecast that I hope the hell I'm wrong about, that's it. But I'm not so convinced I am. We'll see. And that's the political crisis that's going to exacerbate the economic crisis, manifold, which may lead or bring us to a financial crisis next year even faster. These things are all interrelated now, and they are all exacerbating each other. And it's just what Trump wants to do. This is all part of it. And so far, I don't think the more rational wing of the capitalist class in this country has a way of stopping him if he goes that route. They're trying, but I'm not so convinced they're going to succeed. Well, we'll see. I hope the hell I'm wrong. We'll see. But that was the first presidential debate. We may not have a second, unless, of course, it's all a hoax. COVID, Trump with COVID is a hoax. That would be so ironic. But some people are saying it's all a hoax. It's all tactical, for reasons I stated before, for him to avoid, having the debate, looking sympathetic, saying, COVID's not a problem. Everybody open up, blah, blah, blah. Well, time will tell. We'll see. We got another debate and where the hell we're going. But boy, it's going to be a real ride. And the more crisis it becomes, the more likely we will get a foreign policy October surprise out of this guy. And if we do, it will be a naval blockade of Venezuela, I predict. Okay, that's it. I'm out of here. Get down.
hometown.